On March 25th, 2018, Ryan Sadelec kicked off his YouTube channel with an introduction video explaining exactly what to expect on his channel, minus the gym. Chad, I think Ryan might be our first guest who had this kind of, this level of forethought when starting a channel.
He knew exactly what was up with that channel, right out of the gate.
That was pretty amazing. Minus the Gym is a fitness channel focused on improving your strength and well-being from home with bodyweight exercises and by improving your diet. I think a lot of people expect exercise alone to be the key to weight loss or fitness, but it's only one part of the equation. As a certified personal trainer, Ryan shows how anyone can become fit and healthy through calisthenics without having to spend money on weights, gimmicks, or a gym membership. His videos are concise and packed with useful, honest information. If you've been concerned about your own health and need to take that first step, or if you already train like a pro, or maybe you just want to learn how to do a handstand, Minus the Gym is a great resource. Hey, Ryan, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
March 21st, 2018 is the date that the video that Steve mentioned in the intro was your first video. So let's save everything after that for a little bit later, and let's unpack some of your journey leading up to that video upload. So perhaps you could just tell us a bit about your background and some of your journey towards where you are now with your health and fitness lifestyle.
Yeah, well, gosh, that goes all the way back to my childhood. I grew up obese. I just wasn't eating the right foods. I wasn't active or exercising. And, you know, my hobbies were video games and drinking Coca-Cola pretty much. And I just wasn't active. Like, I'd get out and ride my bike and stuff with friends, but apparently not enough. So when I got into high school, I was 220 pounds. That was my heaviest ever. And that's about 60 pounds overweight. And I just, from there, I was like, I have to do something about this. I have to change this. So it started with me just making better food choices. I cut out the pop. I started eating fruits and vegetables on my mom's recommendation. And it, just with those dietary changes, I lost a significant amount of weight. I lost 50 pounds just from changing what I ate. And then fast forward to my junior year of high school. Yeah, junior and senior year, I was in a strength and conditioning class. And that's when I really fell in love with fitness. And it was, you know, weight room. And, you know, a lot of machines and dumbbells and things, but I also was doing, you know, push-ups and other calisthenics as well, crunches and whatnot. So that's really where my fitness journey began, was around age 16 or so. I got really into bodybuilding until age 25. I was constantly bulking or cutting, doing that thing, which is still the most popular form of mainstream fitness. And what that wound me up with was high blood pressure. I went for a checkup with my doctor at age 25, and he said, "You're 25 with the blood pressure of a 75-year-old man." And I was like, I couldn't believe it. I had stage 2 hypertension. So, and on top of that, I had other, you know, more minor health issues. Like, I had bad acne, I had chronic bad breath, and just all these weird problems. So on a friend's recommendation, I tried a plant-based diet at 25. Haven't gone back since. All of my ailments cleared up. And I just kept on that lifestyle, you know, still working out. I was eating plant-based. And then when my first daughter was born, when I was 31, I found it incredibly difficult to get to a gym because my wife needed help. She needed, you know, she wanted me to get home. So I got home from work and I would work out at home. I would just do bodyweight stuff in my living room or the basement when I watched my daughter. And that's how Minus the Gym was born. I was like, wow, this is fantastic. I felt so much better, actually. I felt better doing the bodyweight fitness and the plant-based diet than I had ever felt in my life. And I just wanted to share it with the world.
I would imagine last year was a pretty popular year for your channel with everybody locked at home. Yeah.
It was the first 2 years, 2.5 years or so were kind of slow growth, you could say, although I did have some big wins and my channel grew pretty fast at times. But 2020 with the pandemic, it just exploded. I didn't even have to upload in 2020, to be honest. All my old videos.
They just want to see those.
Yeah.
Well, it was a perfect formula to have body weight workouts from home. It's perfect.
Yeah. And that's what I love about it is the freedom. You know, it's like my physique isn't the same. I'm about 185 now, I think. I haven't been on a scale in a while, but I was a lean 205 when I was 21. So I'm 20 pounds lighter, but I feel better and I'm stronger. I'm more limber and mobile. And it's actually like, I kind of feel like we had it backwards. Like when you're doing the bodybuilding thing and you're eating that high protein diet, you think that's the right thing. You think that's what health is until you try something different. When you try the body weight and plant-based, it's like, holy cow, night and day.
As Steve alluded to in the intro, you knew exactly what you're doing in 2018 when you uploaded that first video to your YouTube channel. So what was leading up to it, and what were you hoping to get out? Like, what were you looking for when you kind of like launched that first video? Was it just, I feel so great about myself, so I want to share? Or was it just like, hey, this is cool, I want to give this a try on YouTube?
Yeah, it was, I viewed it as like YouTube is this platform where anyone can bring their message to the world. And I felt like I had a message to share. I knew people wouldn't be always accepting of it. You know, I've had a lot of flack, especially on the plant-based side of things. But I figured, why not? I'll put myself out there and see what happens. And it was actually, it was very slow growth for the first 6 months. I think I had like 300 subscribers after 6 months, but then finally it started to take off.
I want to get into some of that nutrition talk. Before we do that, describe what a personal trainer does and how that benefits a person. I work with a personal trainer 3 days a week, and it was pretty much life-changing for me.
Yeah. So as a certified personal trainer, we understand exercise science and how to take someone and their goals, like what they want to achieve, and design a routine, an exercise routine based on their goals and their lifestyle so that it fits. It's something that they can actually follow. And that's one of the challenges. It's funny that you mentioned that. One of the challenges on YouTube is that I'm trying to make like a one size fits all kind of approach at times. So that's why a lot of my videos are educational. They're all educational because I want each person to be the trainer. I want each person to understand what are the tools at their disposal so that they can make fitness fit for their lifestyle and their schedule.
What do you think is the most common goal clients have when they come to you?
You know, it's usually very general. Like most people don't want to look like a trophy winning physique or be doing planches and front levers and things like that. It's usually more general. Like I want to lose X amount of pounds by my wedding. Or I just want to stop feeling this pain from working at a desk all day.
Right.
You know, that kind of thing. So
when people come to you with a goal of weight loss, is that something like right up front, you have to tell them, okay, well, the gym is part of that equation, but really it's going to be on you to kind of change the way you're eating.
Yep. And that's something as a personal trainer where we, in the state of Illinois where I live, we can't create meal plans for our clients. It's different from state to state, actually, based on the legality of it. But in Illinois, I can't create a meal plan, but I can make recommendations. And that's what we do is we say, like, here are better food choices you should be making. And something that I preach a lot is intuitive eating. Rather than counting calories, which can be good for some people if they've been chronically overeating or undereating. But for the most part, intuitive eating is the way to go. Just understanding when you're satiated. So you make the right food choices, you eat till you're satiated.
What are some of the other things that people can do? Because this really ends up being a subject which is relatable for me, because I've always had issues with not being able to eat the stuff I'm supposed to be eating and really enjoying the stuff that I shouldn't be eating. And when I was younger, I had the metabolism to keep up with it. And then I got older and it started catching up with me. And my heaviest weight was probably around 260 or 270 pounds. And that's when I changed to intermittent fasting and just basically kind of eating essentially the same stuff, unfortunately. And that's my journey.
But you should also mention that you're about 7 feet tall, Chad. So.
I am tall, so I kind of wear it differently. But however, I learned during that time how important diet was and how important it is to stop making excuses, and also how easy it is today because it's been so normalized to have unhealthy And like vegan lifestyle seems to be this like fringe thing that's easy to point a finger at and be like, it's not what I wanted. It seems to be one or the other, and there's no middle ground. And it's tough for people to want to make the switch from one to another because it seems overwhelming. Are there smaller things that people can do to integrate healthier eating into their life that isn't so at least perceived as like drastic?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's kind of a big question. I'll start with, you mentioned intermittent fasting. And I think intermittent fasting is a great example. It's a tool that we can use, and it's great to fast because when you're not digesting, your body has this freedom. It has available energy to start cleaning house, which is also what we accomplish with a whole food plant-based diet. Really what I think people tend to do when they think about diet is they just think about weight. Am I overweight? Am I underweight? They're forgetting that what you see on the outside is one thing, but on the inside, you have arteries, and everything you eat goes into your bloodstream, and you want to make sure you keep those arteries clean. That's really important for our health, and it's something that's kind of invisible to us. So intermittent fasting is one thing we can do to keep our arteries healthy because our body has an opportunity to clean house, but also the whole food plant-based diet is very low in saturated fat. It's void of cholesterol, and it can be drastic. That is like the one thing that's tough about it. But I will say that it doesn't have to be all in. And that's why on my channel, you will rarely see the word vegan. I don't like using the V word because when I say vegan, people are automatically turned off. They're like, no, I can't do that. I can't go all in, you know, just only plants. But if they say, well, I could go 80-20, you know, like 20% animal products, 80% plants. Hey, if that's better than what you're doing now, go for it. You know, it doesn't have to be exclusively plants.
Yeah, and you're calling that plant dominant diet. And I like that term because I guess that's my goal, is to try to limit the amount of meat. I did do a plant-based diet for a little over a year and tried it out and then ended up going back. But I learned a lot from that, and it was to, one, even the type of meat that I was putting into my body, I try to limit that now to mostly fish and chicken, but definitely the plants. And I think that is a confusion people have, is the difference between a plant-based diet and a vegan, because vegan encompasses much more than just what you're eating. It encompasses you know, what kind of clothing you're wearing and how you treat animals, and all of this stuff is a much bigger issue. So is eating predominantly plant-based diet good enough?
I would say so. You know, vegans will debate on that and say, no, you should go 100%. But that's because, like you said, they don't want you using a leather couch. They don't want you.
Right.
It's all about protecting the animals. I come from a different perspective. Like, I don't want animals mistreated either. But first and foremost, I care about human health. And when we look at the blue zones, I'm not sure if you've heard of blue zones, but that was a study done by Dan Buettner, was his name. It was published in National Geographic. They looked at the 5 longest living cultures in the world and found that
I know these, yeah.
Yeah, they eat a plant predominant diet, but they do eat fish, they do eat chicken. It's just a smaller percentage, you know, in some cases as little as 5%, but in other cases more. So that's really, you know, when I work with clients one-on-one, I don't push veganism. I just say the more plants, the better. But it depends on your comfort zone and what you as an individual are willing to do.
So I guess my struggle with that was I was doing kind of like what you used to be doing, which was bodybuilding. And that has been my goal. It still is, just because I'm an egotistical kind of guy who wants to look big and bulky. But that was the hardest part. And I'm sure you hear this all the time, is how do I get enough protein from eating a plant-based diet? And how do you address that with people? How do you eat enough beans to get all of the protein that you need?
Well, believe it or not, you don't need to just eat beans to get protein.
Being a little facetious there. Yeah.
There, you know, it's surprising. And this is where I actually do sometimes think it's good to count calories. And now that we have phone apps that do it, it's so easy. you just plug in what you eat and it tells you everything. But you'd be surprised if you, I eat high raw. So I try to keep breakfast and lunch mostly raw food, raw plant-based. And I'm shocked at how much protein I get just from like from raw fruits and vegetables. There are some meals I'm getting 15 or 20 grams of protein from stuff that most people think doesn't have any protein at all. And then when you add, for example, a scoop of protein powder into the smoothie, now you've got, 30, 40 grams of protein. So we do, I recommend, protein supplements. I use one scoop a day, but it goes into all the whole food, whether it's beans and lentils or your fruits and veggies, your whole grains, nuts and seeds, they all have some amount of protein in them. So you really don't need to worry about it. That's my main message. As long as you're eating whole food and a variety, you're not just targeting fruits, you're going to get plenty of protein.
Let's switch gears here for a second, because when my wife found out that you were coming on, she asked me to ask you a question.
Okay.
So I have to ask you this question in a way that I'm kind of making it sound like I'm asking it, but this is actually from my wife. And I'm wording this all very delicately because I know she's going to listen to this. So my beautiful wife has challenges getting motivated to work out. Just going from zero to one. It's a huge challenge for her. Her question is, how do you deal with the people who like the biggest issue is just doing that first step? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, part of what I provide as a trainer is accountability. So I'm checking in with them frequently. And I think that's a big factor is when they just know that, oh, Ryan's going to be checking in. He'll be following up with me. That I think is some pressure to get moving. And I've noticed that helps. But another thing I tell them is that you don't have to necessarily do a full-blown workout, right? If someone's completely sedentary, if they're not even going on a walk, I'll often just start them with, start taking your dog for a walk every day. That's a great first step. And what I noticed is when they start moving daily, even if it's just walking, then that motivates them. Like, oh, if I can walk, well, maybe I can start, some basic calisthenics. And it gives them that confidence they need. And what I've noticed, I'm not trying to get off topic here, but in some people, when they don't have the motivation, they often had a poor experience with fitness in the past. So maybe someone recommended a program or they tried a program that was just way too advanced. And that's what kind of, so I take that approach of let's take it easy, make sure you can build that confidence and go from there.
She kind of has gone through periods where she has tried to do it, but it's been that whole approach of like, let's hit the gym January 1, let's go and do this thing. And you do it with the right intentions, I guess, but maybe you just don't do it with a lasting focus that's going to, get you past the first few days to do it. And then it's discouraging. It's kind of like quitting smoking. And I realized I was a smoker and I quit smoking. I was like, that's the most difficult thing ever. I'd never be able to do it. And then you finally do it and you're like, wow, I managed to do it, but it takes so long. And there's so many like false steps or like missteps leading up to that. And that's really discouraging, especially at a time where it's like, I don't know how you deal with the stigma of like working out being something, which is just like going to the dentist. It's the one thing that you can do for your body, which is so good. It's the best way you could possibly ever give back to your body. But we kind of treat it as just like, ugh, I want to do something else.
Yeah.
I can see how that's a challenge for some people.
And that's one thing is like, I use calisthenics as my main way to work out just because it's so accessible. But I tell people like, hey, if you don't like it, if you don't like push-ups and pull-ups, that's fine. Maybe you like kayaking or riding your bike or anything. I mean, just whatever keeps you active that you enjoy, that's the most important thing. And you'd be surprised if someone who's, like I said, completely sedentary, they start a daily walking regimen and they just keep that up for 6 months. That's going to give them better results than if they tried that Jan 1, let's hit the gym, and then it only lasts a few weeks kind of thing.
From my own personal experience, Chad and Melissa, may want to try it, is consider a personal trainer, because I'm kind of in that same way. Having a personal trainer to work with keeps me motivated, it is that accountability partner. And I know when 2020 came along and I set up right overhead here a pull-up bar, I made a dips bars, I made a weight bench and all that stuff, it's hard for me to find the motivation to do it. And I half-ass my workouts. Even if I go to the gym without my trainer there, I sort of half-ass those workouts, you know? It's just, and maybe that's just the way some people are. So I think that there's so much value to having a personal trainer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially in the beginning. And then you get to a point where like where I'm at is on most days I have the motivation, but I have my off days. And what I do at that point is I have a vision board where it's actually my desktop wallpaper on my computer. But if I look at that and I see, oh, that's why I do this. This is my goal, my mission. That motivates me. It's like, yeah, I'm minus the gym. I'm bringing this to the world and boom, I get motivated. So sometimes it's that too, just a reminder of what are your goals?
Just being able to set those goals is important too. I think that's like probably a big mistake people might make is just, I just want to get healthy. I want to get more fit. Those aren't really goals, you know, per se. Yeah. For me, I like to have solid numbers, you know, and I know I'm not a body weight only kind of workout guy, but I do like to see like, okay, I want to bench press a certain amount at a certain time and just have something to work towards. But I think that goals with like pull-ups it would be a great way to set a goal. You know, I want to do one pull-up. And then when you get that, you can try for five, you know?
Yeah, that's a great point you brought up. Pull-ups and handstand, they're both pretty lofty goals, at least, in, you know, people view it that way. But what I've noticed is when they are dedicated to it, that completely changes them because they realize, okay, I'm going to have to lose weight and lean out because I can't be pulling myself up if I have all this extra weight on me. Yeah. And if it's handstand, it's like, wow, I'm going to have to work on my balance. And it's like so many facets of fitness are involved with it that when they set a big goal like that and they work towards it for, it might take a year or 2 years, completely changes a person and their approach to fitness.
For a dum-dum like me, can you explain from a very, very basic level what calisthenics are?
Yeah, so calisthenics comes from a couple Greek words. I think it's like kalisthenos, two words. It means beauty strength. And what it is it's body weight exercise. So any exercises that you're pulling up your body weight, like pull-ups, push-ups, dips, squats, lunges, you know, with body weight, leg raises, that's calisthenics. And what's beautiful about it is that you can do it pretty much anywhere. The only thing you might need is a bar or, you know, something to hang on to so that you can pull yourself up or, you know, do leg raises. But it's very accessible. You know, people do them hanging on trees, I've seen, you know, or they use gymnastics rings, hang them somewhere. And it's just a great way to work out.
And you only need the three, basically there's three types of exercises, right? You've got push, pull, and legs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is. I add a fourth category called hinge. And hinge is where, like in the weightlifting world, you put deadlift in there. But you don't need hinge. And that's something I just made a video about on my channel about, I think, 3 weeks ago. For a while, I was just doing push-pull squat. And, you know, the beginning of a squat is a hip hinge. You're moving the hips back. So you're hitting your core with those three basic movements. And that, I think, is the foundation of any good program is going to be your push, pull, and squat.
Should you be exhausted after a workout or after every workout?
No, not every. Yeah. So I'm actually doing something right now called daily undulating periodization. And the idea is I'm exercising 7 days a week, but only 4 or 5 of those days are intense. And then 2 or 3 days, you know, and I go by how I feel. I might just do yoga on those days if I'm really exhausted, or I might just do half my normal intensity or volume of calisthenics.
Should I be eating before working out, after working out, or like instead of working out? I'm not too sure the decorum, because I once heard it's like, well, your whole workout is moot if you don't eat within 15 minutes afterwards.
You're right.
And have this amount of protein. And then it's like, it's all the more reason to be like push away from everything, because like, this sounds confusing. I don't want to work out and then like gain weight because I ate, you know, the wrong thing at the wrong time.
Yeah. I don't think you have to worry about, you know, gaining weight from not eating, especially before your workout. But I probably, you know, some people would disagree with this. In the bodybuilding world, they preach pre-workout and they have tons of supplements that you can spend your money on for that. And post-workout within a 1 hour window. And they call it the anabolic window. And there is some truth to that. Like if you if you get carbs and protein in that first hour, it does boost your muscle protein synthesis. You know, your body starts repairing. But is it necessary for everybody? No, not at all. I often will work out and not eat for well over an hour afterwards if I'm busy. And I never eat before my workout. I don't do pre-workouts. I love working out fasted, especially since I started doing body weight exercise. I feel lighter with nothing in my belly. So I wake up, I'll have some tea or some, you know, water, well, definitely water. And I hang out with my wife for a while. And then when I get to my workout, it might be 1 or 2 hours since I've woken up and I'm, you know, fasted. I haven't eaten anything yet that morning. And then I don't eat till well after I'm done working out.
Is there value to measuring your macros and keeping tight control over how much protein, carbs, and fat you're putting into your body? Because I was kind of really into that for a while. And then I was using one of those apps, you know, where you just record everything. It was great. And I could see the calories. But I began just kind of obsessing over all this minutia. It's kind of like YouTube analytics. You can get like so deep into it that you don't know. And then, so I don't know. Is that something that's worth doing?
Well, it depends on your goals. If you have physique oriented goals, I would say definitely. It's my best results in terms of, like, you know, bodybuilding physique has come when I was counting my macros. But if you're, you know, if the average person is just looking to be healthy, right? They're focused on health and longevity. You know, they want to slim down. They want to have a nice athletic physique. But in that case, you don't have to get that precise with it.
One of the things that always confuses me is, okay, I'm trying to build mass. I kind of just want to look better. And again, this just goes back to my personal vanity. But they always say, well, you've got to kind of have a caloric excess. What do they call it? Well, you need more calories, really, than you can get. And that always kind of confused me, because I would think, well, I need to eat more because I'm not getting all the calories I need because I'm not really a huge eater. But at the same time, I don't want to eat so much that then I'm just putting on excess pounds that is just developing into my, you know, tire around my midsection. Yeah. So it always puzzles me is how to balance calories in, calories out.
What comes from the bodybuilding world, and I keep referring to that because that's what's popular in the mainstream.
It's everywhere.
Yeah, just like what you said, you eat in a caloric surplus, you do a bulk cycle, and then you're going to gain some fat with it. So then you go into a cut cycle, and you just sort of oscillate between those. And that is one approach that you can use, you know, as a bodybuilders do. But I subscribe to the idea that, And I've noticed this myself, if you just learn to eat till you're satiated, your body will know what to do. So if you're pushing yourself in your workouts and you're trying to get stronger or do more volume from workout to workout, your hunger will naturally increase a little bit. And as long as you tune into that and you eat whole foods, you're getting enough protein till satiation, your body will take care of that. It will build your muscles and it will build strength. And you'll gain less fat with it. They call that a lean bulk. Lean bulking is when you're really not eating in this excessive surplus. If you counted it, you'd probably notice that you're getting like 200 or 300 calories over maintenance. But, you know, I preach the intuitive eating, just listening to your body.
What do you think of this business going around about the dad bod is like the new sexy? Is that just like guys kind of making excuses?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think, you know, we should all be accepting of one another, and we should, you know, everyone's kind of on their own journey, and some people just aren't interested in fitness. But I do think, like, it's good to exercise, and you will avoid the dad bod if you just put in some effort.
I just want to get rid of that midsection, man. That's the hardest thing. I can get everything else I feel good about, but man, it's that middle section of blob.
Well, in that case, it sounds like, you know, maybe a little bit of caloric deficit is what you need if you're trying to to lose a little bit.
Right.
Keep training.
See, that's my problem. It's like, I know I need that caloric deficit for that, but I also want to not let my muscles go to flab.
Don't worry about that. If you're training with intensity and you're eating whole food, your body will prioritize those amino acids and at least maintain what you've got. I've actually built some mass and have gained strength while eating in a deficit. I do believe it's possible as long as your deficit isn't too big. You don't want to be starving yourself. You want to feel satiated no matter what you're trying to accomplish.
Where did the name Minus the Gym come from?
Oh, good question. So when I first had this idea back in 2017, actually, it started as a blog and I bought the domain No Gym Necessary. But then a friend of mine was like, I can't spell necessary.
Nobody knows how to spell necessary.
I was just about to say, I don't know how to spell necessary. I couldn't do it now. Don't put me on the spot and be like, spell necessary.
I'm not even sure I can spell it, to be honest. So he convinced me and he helped me come up with the name. And we brainstormed for weeks. And then it's funny. I liked this band at the time called Minus the Bear. They disbanded since then. And I was listening to them one night. And I'm like, wait, Minus the Gym? It just like...
So it was just like a moment, like it appeared, because it's a great name.
Thanks.
Love complimenting a good name, especially when it's so conversational. It's so it doesn't sound like you're saying like a business or a brand name. And I love that it is exactly what it is. It's Minus the Gym. So
thank you. I appreciate that.
So you said it was about 6 months before, like, so you're uploading some videos, you're doing your thing. Actually, let's go, before you uploaded your first, but what YouTube channels were you watching to kind of influence you or like figure out like, you know, who, did you have any experience in front of camera before or had done anything like this before?
No, not on camera, but I had a lot of experience with public speaking just from not just school, but my career. Because I actually went to school for computer science and I worked as a software engineer for a decade. So I was giving lots of presentations and meetings and stuff. So I had that, but nothing on camera. Channels that I was watching. Well, Athlean X is hugely popular. I couldn't avoid, you know, watching some of that. And in the calisthenics arena, there's people like Fitness FAQs. Daniel Vadnell, I believe is his name. Austin Dunham. And there's a couple guys in Germany called Calisthenic Movement, and they really inspired me. The thing is, though, I noticed that they were all very big on the gymnastics kind of calisthenics, which is literally gymnastics moves like levers and planches and flags. I was more old school. I was actually reading books. I was really into this book called Convict Conditioning, and that's kind of what inspired me. And this guy, Al Cavadlo from New York. A lot of the guys in New York influenced me because they're about the basics. And that's what I love is just doing lots of basics.
Calisthenics is kind of a traditional military training, isn't it?
It is, yeah. They use a lot of calisthenics in the military. Squat thrusts, like burpees, pull-ups, push-ups, etc. Squats.
Burpees are going to be the death of me someday, I swear. I'll never get used to doing burpees.
Wow. You should check out my burpee tutorial. I show the
I saw it. I saw it. It's good. I mean, I should say it's. I do them. It's just my least favorite exercise.
Are you doing the burpee with the jump and the like the full blown?
Yeah.
Oh.
I do the jump and then sometimes I'll do the jump with the push up on the way down and I don't know. It's just, I just do what my trainer tells me to do, grumble a little bit. What do you think of this? You mentioned Athlean X, and he's real big on kind of making the distinction between training and exercising. Do you think that there's a lot to that, that you should be training rather than just exercise? Because exercising sort of implies that you don't really have any goals.
Yeah. I do agree with that. It's good to be goal-oriented and to be working towards something. So I agree with that you should be training for something. But I also believe that there are times in your life where maybe you're just too stressed out and you need a break. And I don't believe in stopping exercise. I've even like, okay, like I my daughter, both my daughters, when they were born, it was a tough time for me and my wife, but I still exercised. I wasn't trying to progress at anything, but I was just going through the motions so that I could keep up.
Maintain.
So, yeah, maintain, exactly. So I agree with that, but I do think there are times, or if a death in the family, you're stressed out, you're having trouble sleeping, there's just times in your life where you just want to go through the motions and not be adding more stress to your life.
You said it took about 6 months to kind of really get some traction on the channel. Was it a video that you launched that kind of did well and broke the trend, or was it just you had enough videos kind of in the algorithm that it just started picking up steam?
Yeah, it was a specific video, and I could tell you that story. I love that story. So for the first 6 months, I was just making tutorials about the basics, right? How to do push-ups, how to do diamond push-ups and all that stuff. About 6 months in, I'm like, okay, it's time to make something big. So I made a beginner routine video, which was highly detailed. I think it was about 15, 20 minutes long. And I actually looked at the competition on that one. It was the first time I was like, let me do some SEO here. And I looked, and there were no really competing videos. I think there was one beginner calisthenics routine video, which honestly wasn't that good. You know, he was recommending pull-ups, and I was like, well, pull up, you know, beginners can't do pull-ups. So how do you throw that in there? So I made my own beginner routine, made the video, put a lot of time into it, put it out there. That was October of 2018. And it just sort of sat idle. It got some views. But then in the first week of December, I remember I was watching Sesame Street with my daughter. She was 18 months old at the time. And my phone just started vibrating like crazy. It was just like every minute or two, it was vibrating. And at the time, I still had YouTube sending me notifications when I got a new subscriber. So I grab my phone. I see all these new subscriber notifications. I'm like, what's going on? And I dig in. And that beginner routine was just taken off to the moon. And it's now at, I think, 3 million views, like 2.9 million. So it just exploded. and that's really, I jumped from about 300 subs to, I closed out 2018 with 10,000 subs.
What are your thoughts on the state of the hashtag fitness influencer? I mean, it seems like they're just everywhere. And it's gotten to where, especially on Instagram, it's just basically kind of people showing off their bodies, but not really doing a lot of real fitness workouts or anything. I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah. So I think there is it's good to have those fitness influencers, because it's, for some people, it's motivation. They see what they're doing. They even share their workouts on Instagram or whatever. And they're like, oh, that gives me ideas and it inspires me to work out. But I do agree that sometimes they have good genetics. They're, who knows, they might even be using PEDs, you know, like performance enhancing drugs. And in that case, it's like false advertising, because even if you do that workout that they're sharing, you're not going to get those results. So I agree with it and I disagree with it. I've taken the more honest and humble approach, I guess, where I'm just like, hey, this is me working out in my living room. Love it or hate it, this is what I do.
On YouTube, there's a lot of fitness channels, and now there's a lot of body weight specific fitness channels. So is there anything that you do to kind of like stand out from the crowd?
Not too much. I think I do infuse the nutrition a bit. I try to, you know, even though I get a lot of dislikes on those videos sometimes, the carnivore community jumps on me often. But, yeah. I try to stand out in that way, that I have my message and I'm sticking to it from that first video, you know, from that welcome video. Whereas I think a lot of these new fitness channels, they're like, there's one that I watched that he's like taking a Mr. Beast kind of approach to it. He's like giving out money for reps and stuff. And I don't see myself ever doing that. Like, you know, trying to do that kind of stuff. I'm more just keeping it real. Like, hey, here's how you work out at home.
Have you seen these videos where they'll usually, like in Santa Monica or something, on the beach, where a guy sets up the pull-up bar, and if you can hang for 100 seconds, he'll pay you $100 or something. And it's basically a scam, because the bar is loose. It's not tight on there. So it's like super, super, because I was thinking, oh, I could hold easily for 100 seconds. Just hang. Yeah. That's all you got to do. But no, that bar is... it's not attached. Sick. It just spins freely in there.
Yeah, that'd be tough.
Do you have a content mix that you do you feel like you're making videos that your audience wants to see, or do you still inject like, these are videos that I want to make? How do video ideas come to you, and how do you kind of like organize what's next?
Yeah, you know, I'm very. I have to admit, I'm very disorganized in that sense. I have my playlists, and I kind of try to rotate through them not in any specific order. And I do take recommendations, you know, or requests in the comments. But, you know, for the most part, I'm just taking it week by week. I'm like, okay, like, it's often like, what am I focused on in my own workouts? The most recent thing was I made a video last week. It was stop counting reps because a friend of mine recommended, he was like, hey, you did that 100 reps video, try not counting. And I did that for a week and I was like, whoa, like I was so focused on form and technique because I wasn't counting. And so I made a video about that. And that's often what I do is just like, whatever my thing is currently, that's the next video.
That was kind of a revelation for me to stop counting reps because I don't even know if I could stop counting reps
it's hard.
It's like, I think I would just, I don't think I could focus my brain to not count. And I guess when you're counting reps, it's mostly for hypertrophy, right? If you want to, you could probably explain this better, but if you're wanting to grow muscle, it's different than wanting to gain strength. And the way you approach a workout is going to be different, correct?
Yeah, it's rep range. So when you want to focus like solely on strength, you're going to do heavier work where you're kind of maxing out at 5 reps or less. Whereas with hypertrophy, you're going to be over that 5 rep max. You're going to be more into it can go all the way up, but I mean, people say 6 to 15 in that range. But I've noticed you can go 30 reps and still gain muscle mass. It really comes down to the load. And when you're focusing on strength, you want to take longer rests. You want to maximize your performance for each set.
Is it a bad idea to, if you want hypertrophy, to always work to failure on every set?
Yeah. I do think there's some truth to that because Paul Cech says, if you train to failure, you train to fail. And I do think there's some truth to that. You want to leave a little bit of gas in the tank. I call it near failure. But, you know, so say like with that current weight that you're using, you could maybe get 15. Well, if you stop at 12, try to get 12 reps for all 4 of your sets rather than 15, do your max on the first, and then you're only getting like 13 on the next one and 11 on the next, and you're dropping.
Oh, right.
Each. Yeah.
Because then you're not getting in the volume, the overall amount, right? Can you spot people who are juicing just by kind of looking at them and think, yeah, I'll bet you that guy's.
Yeah, kind of. I sometimes see these characteristics where I'm like, yeah, I think he is juicing. And that's because I have an uncle who in the 90s, he took, they're called pro hormones, but they're like steroids that haven't been banned yet, basically. Mm-hmm. And he took 4-androstenediol back in the 90s. And his biceps had these veins popping out of them. That's just insane. You know, you see that, you're like, that's not normal. And when I see that in, you know, on Instagram and on YouTube, I'm like, yeah, that guy's juicing.
Speaking of performance enhancers, do you make your own thumbnails? That's the best segue ever, by the way. I'm going to call out that that's an amazing segue.
I totally see good. This. You know, Chad is focused on YouTube growth.
You see? And then Steve starts like, selfishly bringing in. He just has a list of questions that he wants to ask you for his own personal. And I pull it back to the show.
That is
no, I actually wanted to ask you about your thumbnails because I'm really impressed by your thumbnails and by your title. So clearly you understand walking the line with, not clickbait, but just like alluring performance-enhancing titles or thumbnails. Is this the work that you do yourself? Do you spend a lot of time thinking about the thumbnail? Do you put a lot of options together and then like, test or?
Yep, it's really, I make my own thumbnails and I don't use Photoshop. I know a lot of people talk about Photoshop. I use a free one called GIMP. And it's like a free Photoshop. I started using that in the beginning because I couldn't afford Photoshop and I'm still using it. The idea is, you know, some other creators say, don't make a video if you can't see the thumbnail in your mind, if you don't have a clear, good thumbnail. And I often, you know, don't take that approach. I'll have a good video idea. I'll have a title like the stop counting reps. I'm like, yeah, that'll really get people's attention. But I have no idea about the thumbnail until I'm sitting down to make it. And I'm like, oh, what am I going to do here? So I often just like you know, I'm shooting a picture of me doing an exercise and throwing a caption on it or something. But the one thing that really I think has helped me, and this was recommendation from a friend, the friend who told me, you know, to change no gym necessary to minus the gym. He said he referenced a Rocky Balboa poster where it was like black and white background and Stallone was in color. And I just tried that with some thumbnails in the beginning and I've stuck with it for the most part. So I do a black and white background and I pop a little bit.
I'm looking through your thumbnails right now and like a good one is stop doing these three push-up mistakes. And so the thumbnail, I think this is really good because it says don't do this. And it has you looking at the camera doing a push-up. And I'm thinking, it looks okay to me. And so I'm going to click on that to see, okay, what exactly are you doing that I don't want to do? You know, that's, I think, perfect thumbnail right there.
Yeah, that one I was flaring my elbows, but I think with the angle, the dead-on angle, it's hard to tell that I'm really flaring them.
It really does seem to be the simpler the background, almost like just the gray, flat gray with you doing some kind of incline or push-up or it's kind of... You have a particular style, like the three videos that hover of a million views kind of all have that same like simple gray background and then you just doing something horizontal. Horizontal is the secret, apparently. Lying horizontally.
Yeah, but that's definitely my style. I like simple. I like the subject to really pop, which is usually me, but you know, maybe it won't be if it's a nutrition video or something.
You mentioned that a couple of times. Are those your least performing videos if you talk about nutrition?
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Yeah. They perform very poorly. Like I'll often see them max out at like 5,000 or 10,000 views. It's just not a lot of interest.
Isn't it true? It's like the Biggest Loser show on TV or something. They really focus heavily on the workouts because I guess it's not as visual to talk about the really important stuff, which is your diet.
Right. Yeah. And like I mentioned in the beginning, I lost 50 pounds just from dietary changes. Yeah. You know, it's very powerful. I was active. I was hanging out with my friends. I was a teenager and I was like riding my bike a lot. So there's that. But oftentimes our lifestyle is fine. You know, we might be active individuals and we are just putting the wrong things in our body.
Yeah, I always think if you want to lose weight, just you got to reduce the food. And exercising is just going to make you hungry, you know?
I'm going to just say I'm a bit of a conspiracy theorist, but I do think a lot of it is there's just this push for us to eat more protein, even though it's not necessarily healthy to get that excess protein. I don't know if it's the supplement industry or the livestock industry, but I think that might be part of it too. There's this huge emphasis on exercise and, oh, but get your protein because you're exercising. When in reality, it's like, no, I've had great results doing neither.
The supplement industry is just huge. They're really trying to sell supplements for everything.
Yeah.
And if you would just, you know, eat some fresh vegetables.
Yeah.
It's pretty simple.
Yeah.
Do you pay attention to your YouTube analytics? Do you care about video views or anything like that? Or do you just put content out and once it's out there, you're already moving on to kind of what is going to be next?
Well, I definitely look at analytics and I care. I do want to reach more people and to get more views. Views are good for many reasons. I mean, it's income as well as helping more people, right? But I don't want to sacrifice my mission statement and my message. And that's kind of where I draw the line. So if there's some like trending topic that's like, wow, if I hop on that, I could really get a lot of views, but it doesn't align with MTG and my message, I'm not going to do it. Yeah.
So you're fine putting out smaller view videos that you know are going to be smaller view because that contributes to the over, like that contributes to what you're trying to do as opposed to just trying to acquire views and endless acquire subscribers to build an audience.
And that's like my nutrition. It's a lot of my tutorials that are smaller performing videos, but I'm fine with that because it's part of the foundation of what Minus the Gym is.
Did you get your 100K plaque?
I did, yeah.
Where do you keep your 100K plaque?
I have a desk in the basement where I do my editing and it's right there on the wall.
Do you know where the million plaque is gonna go?
There's a spot right next to it.
Right beside it?
Yeah. Whenever I look at that 100,000, I see that empty space. I'm like, all right, we're going for a million.
Hey, before we go, do you have any advice for somebody who is sitting around, maybe listening to this, who's been kind of thinking, you know, I should probably get out and do some exercise.
Listening to Chad and Steve have a podcast.
Exactly. What's the big motivational pitch you can give them to do something?
I'd say, you know, the big motivational pitch, and if I could leave them with one important message, is that fitness is a practice. That's the main message I want to get across. So don't view it like you got to dive in, you got to do the heavy stuff, you got to beat yourself up in workouts. Find something that you can do, that you enjoy doing, and just start there. And look at it as a long-term practice that you're going to stick to. And then it'll just sort of evolve. You'll know what the next step is as you go.
Would you say there's one biggest mistake people make, or what's the most common mistake people make when they start working out?
Yeah. Going in, diving in head first and going too hard too fast. You get sore.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You get sore, you get burnt out. And that's that bad fitness experience I mentioned earlier, where then now they're not going to be motivated to try again in the future. And right. Sadly, I have seen personal trainers do that to people, just start them off too hard. And then the client doesn't stick around because it's like, man, that was brutal. I don't want to do that. Like, it feels, you know, when you exercise hard, it feels like you have a fever. It really does. You know, your head is warm and your temperature is rising, your blood pressure is up. Why would anyone want to do that? It's not fun. So you got to start them off easy. You got to ease in.
It's amazing what you can do just with, I even during the lockdown, I was putting bricks in a backpack, you know, and kind of dragging that around and doing some things. If you get creative.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's fun to get creative like that. You know, it's, I think that's kind of what sparked me to want to create Minus the Gym. I was getting creative like that too. I was doing pull-ups on my my second floor, like when you're going up the stairs, hanging on to the top level up there. And I was like, yeah, I should put this on YouTube and show people. I'm doing L-sits on my deck railing. It's like, why not?
Yeah, I actually wanted to point that out, is that you have videos on like, how do you even get started? Say you can't even do a single push-up. And so some people might think, well, I can't do a push-up. Why am I watching this guy? But you actually have a video showing, well, no, you start against the wall. You're just pushing against the wall. And then maybe you progress up to, you're leaning on some stairs and pushing up. So it's a progression to get to this point. And it's the same with pull-ups or squats or anything else.
Exactly. Find something you can do that you can manage, because it's about the movement. Like with the push-up example, you want to feel the shoulder blades moving and gliding along the rib cage. And once you get a feel for that, you can increase the resistance by just changing the angle as you get closer to the floor. And that's applicable to any exercise in bodyweight fitness.
What's the hardest kind of push-up to do?
Handstand push-up for me, but that's what I'm working on. But there's the planche push-up. I don't see myself ever training for planche, to be honest, but that's probably the
hardest. What's a planche? What's the
planche? Planche is a hand balancing move where your body's horizontal. So like your arms are kind of like this and your legs are back there like that.
And you do a push-up in that position?
No, there's people, I can't do it, but there's people out there who can do planche push-ups. Yeah.
Wow.
So is that like is that just like pure bicep? Like what muscles are you using to
like
two muscles in your entire body.
Yeah. It's your shoulders, a lot of shoulders. But your biceps are definitely engaged and stabilizing because your shoulders are so far forward of your hands, and your hands are going to point the fingers kind of outwards to get into that position. And it's really hard on the wrists. Like I thought handstands were hard on the wrists when I learned how to do a handstand, but planche takes it to a whole new level.
Wow. Because
the lever. Yeah. The way that your legs are extended. It's very advanced.
Well, that's the thing with the bodyweight workouts, is you can always keep upping your game. Even with like squats, you could do single leg, like pistol squats. I can't do them, but people do them, you know.
Funny you mentioned that. There was a point where I was squatting 315 for reps at the gym. This was in my 20s, and I saw a guy doing pistol squats, And I tried it and I fell on my butt. And I'm like, I don't even have the mobility to do one.
Wow.
But I thought I was so cool squatting with three plates.
Sure.
You know?
Well, and it also just takes so much core to keep yourself stable and balanced on the one.
Yeah, core and ankle mobility. That's what I lacked, was ankle mobility.
Well, Ryan, I want to thank you for joining us on the podcast. And I really want to congratulate you on the success of your YouTube channel.
Well, thank you.
I've been really enjoying everything that you're doing on there, and it's helping me, and it's helping me to look a little bit differently at workout. And maybe I can just get back to using my own pull-up bar here in my shop a little bit more.
Excellent. Yeah, it was a pleasure being here on the show, and I really appreciate you guys extending the invite.
If you'd like to drop us a line here at the podcast and let us know what you think about the podcast, send us an email at hi@chadandsteve.com. We'd love to hear you. Thanks for listening, everybody.